I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. We've probably all done it at one point in our lives, lived with a roommate. And in this town, with leases expiring at the end of August and all the students that are back, we're looking at how shared living is portrayed on the big screen. Here with me in Studio 3 is film critic Garen Daly. Garen, why do roommate dynamics keep popping up in film?
It's easy. I mean, when you think about it, you've got two completely different people who hardly know each other, and they're being stuck in perhaps the most intense and intimate situation possible, living together, sleeping together, using the bathroom together, all the things that we do in our privacy, they're doing together. And it gets really, really easy when you have one who is neat and the other who's a slob, and all of a sudden you've got great tension that could either be dramatic or could be comedic.
So is it really a character study more than anything else, and they just use this sort of the scenario as roommates as a way to sort of play that out?
Yeah, and I think you see that more on TV rather than you do on in films, because if you take a look at the sitcoms on TV, it's totally populated with these roommate situations, Friends, Big Bang Theory, on and on and on. It's a lot easier to do those little small pieces of 8 or 9 minutes of leading up to a joke in a movie in the TV rather than a movie. And the movie, you really need to develop the characters and you need to have outside influences. So when you look at a lot of the roommate films, there's something else going on and then there is a roommate.
Mm. Well, we just played the theme song to The Odd Couple. So, and I think when people, if they know about The Odd Couple and they think about roommates, that really is the quintessential roommate scenario. So let's listen to the trailer from The Odd Couple.
You had your chance to talk last night. I beg you to come upstairs with me.
If you want to live here, I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to smell you cooking.
Now, kindly remove that spaghetti from my poker tape.
It's not spaghetti. It's linguine.
Now it's garbage.
So that's Walter Matthau and
Jack Lemmon.
Thank you, Jack Lemmon. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, playing Oscar and Felix and yeah. Neil Simon's play and put on screen. And, you know, you've got the perfect example here. One is a slob. One is a neatnik, and they get on each other's nerves. But one of the things that's interesting about The Odd Couple is this is an older coupling. Mm-hmm. These people are not, you know, 20-year-olds going to college. They're forced by circumstance to go into a living situation. Circumstances here being they're both getting divorced from their respective wives, and they're kind of like forced into this situation. Sometimes when you look at the movies, that is the impetus. You're being forced into this situation, and you're being forced to not only be in the situation, but also to look at yourself. And that's one of the things you also see in a roommate movie.
Well, in this way, The Odd Couple was really quite precedent-setting, although maybe people didn't think about it then. This was 1968.
Right.
And not only have you just mentioned that they were older, but these are two guys, and they were both two straight guys.
Correct.
You know, I think at the time, whoever came up with this idea thought, oh, well, this would be an interesting twist. They're not women and they're not young, because that's what you think of if you think of roommates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, there is some precedent in movies that go back even further where there are roommates. And when I started thinking about this, the first one that popped into my mind was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, because Hollywood can go fantasy. Okay, so here's a scene from the 1937 classic, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And in this scene, the Seven Dwarfs come home to find the disturbing signs that Snow White, their new roommate, is on the premise.
Look! The floor! It's been swept!
Chair's been dusted. Our wind has been washed. Gosh, our cobwebs are missing.
What? Why, the whole place is clean.
There's dirty work afoot.
Sink's empty. Hey, someone stole our dishes.
They ain't stole. They're hid in the cupboard.
I guess I hadn't thought about that as a roommate situation, but it is a roommate situation.
It is a roommate situation. And again, used very effectively for comedy as relief in this animated classic. And, you know, the boys, you know, the seven boys are sloppy. And again, kind of stereotypical men being sloppy, women being neat, women cleaning up after men. So there's a lot of stereotypes going on in there. But it is a very early example of our culture looking at roommate situations.
And we should point out that when Enchanted with the fabulous Amy Adams, which is a remake of this scenario, came around, I mean, she also did a little cleaning up with a little magic that was a little disastrous in that scenario, too.
Well, you know, every time I see that scene where she's in both films with Amy Adams and with Snow White, when they're cleaning up the house with all those animals, I'm going, who's going to clean up the poop from all the animals?
Exactly.
Like, really?
So what are the things that you raised about people being forced to live together is a very real phenomenon now, or just looking at some statistics, which I did not know, that from 2009 to 2010, the number of 30-somethings living with non-family roommates went up from 10.6 million to 12 million. It's an increase of 13%. This is collected by the Census Bureau. And the Census Bureau folks say, of course, you have high unemployment, then you've got stagnant wages for a lot of people, and housing prices are high. So it's impacting on all those factors in the economy, but non-family folks who are older are now becoming more the norm than you would think, like college students rooming together.
You know, and I think some of that has to go with the fact that, for my own example, I was in a roommate situation up until about 4 months ago. I mean, I'm in the process of getting divorced, and it was just much more economical for me to have a roommate. But, you know, when you're younger, it's so much easier. So when you are faced in a circumstantial place where there's a divorce or you've lost a job or whatever the circumstances are, getting a roommate makes a lot of sense. But you got to be careful. And that's what we learn from the movies, is that if you're not careful, you could end up with somebody who's going to make your life absolutely miserable.
Or, in the case of single white female, make you dead. I mean, usually these films
that
are
having ruin your whole day.
Yeah, I have a little comedic edge to it, but in the case of a single white female, it was a drama, and more than a drama, it was a kind of a little bit. It's not horror, I guess. How would you describe?
A chiller.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
And there's actually some you know, themes running through the film as well. When you take a look at it, you see sexual activity as being an indicator of something that's amiss. Mm. You see the roommate starting to assume the personality. And also, if you look at these kind of chiller roommate films, when they start saying that one of the roommates is weak or pathetic,
that's the end.
That's a sign that there's trouble afoot.
Let's take a listen to Single White Female, and it's from 1992.
An ad for a roommate brought a stranger into Allison's life.
Well, it's kind of fun having a girlfriend again.
Someone.
Do you guys know when you'll be back?
No, it's kind of an anniversary tonight.
Really?
Who cares?
Where the hell have you been?
Making me feel like I'm 16 years old here.
Someone who would kill to be her. Single white female. Living with a roommate can be murder.
And of course, in case, I hope people get it, that the single white female is how it was advertised.
Correct.
The person who was advertising for a roommate who was a single white female.
Back in the days when you actually went into a newspaper to look at a classified ad. I mean, the other part of all of that is the fact that you never really know who is going to be coming into your life. Mm. And that's, again, part we talked about a little beginning, that positioning of somebody new, somebody entering your life and not really knowing it, and then hopefully coming away with something good. Now, what traditionally happens in roommate situations and happens in the movies is one is the alpha and one is the beta. One is the one that's in control, and one is the one that kind of just tries to get along.
Oh, that's interesting. So how would you describe in the film, The More the Merrier? We have a scenario where people are forced to live together. This was a time in Washington, D.C., when housing was very limited. And so people were struggling, trying to find a place to live. This was World War II housing shortage in Washington. And thinking about men and women sharing a single apartment was a little bit different. But In this film, that's exactly what happened. So let's listen to a clip when we talk about it on the other side. This is 1943, The More the Merrier.
Look! The floor! It's been swept!
Well, that would be Snow White. It's The More the Merrier coming up.
Anyway, in More the Merrier.
Okay.
You've got, it is 1943. It is Washington, D.C. It is, Jean Arthur has an apartment and people are trying to get a room to stay in. Charles Coburn, who is a older gentleman, decides that he's going to take this room and he tries to convince, Jean Arthur that it's worthwhile. The fact that he's older makes it okay for a guy to live with a girl. And, of course, he acts as Cupid to be able to get her hooked up with Joel McRae. So, I mean, it's more of a Hollywood confection rather than an indictment of an examination of roommate situation. But the fact is that Charles Coburn takes the position of being a father figure to Jean Arthur.
You know, once again, we have a scenario where film often reflects cultural shifts.
Right.
Now, typically, it's after the shift has been going for a while.
Correct.
But, you know, this genre seems to, even in its many iterations, seems to almost be all right at the correct point in time, as I'm looking, you know, over the films that we're just discussing here.
Yeah, I don't think it changes all that much when you think about it. It is one of those constants. If you're going to be a roommate in a roommate situation, you know, you could be a roommate for maybe 2 months and then have a lifelong friendship out of that 2 months. Think about the roommates that we had in college. Many of those people were very short term, maybe a semester, two semesters, and yet you still remain very good friends. So there's something very formative about it that we all enjoy, or at least get something out of it. And we do learn something about ourselves when we're in a roommate situation, because we are seeing ourselves reflected through somebody else who's not a relative, who did not grow up with you, and is not a parent.
Mm. Though I'm going to guess that in the next cultural shift, roommate situation reflected in movies is going to be kids moving back home. You know, when I say kids, I mean grown kids moving back home because of all of the reasons we've just stated about people unable to pay for housing.
There are a few films out there, one of them being Failure to Launch with Matthew McConaughey, which is not very good, but I think you're right. I think we're going to start seeing that because, again, the tension will be there.
Right.
You're going to have parents who are going to feel like they're being invaded by their own kids. They're going to feel kids who are going to feel like they don't have a place in life. So there really is going to be some ripe material for writers to have a good time. And there's one that's out right now called For a Good Time Call that came out last week, which is about two young women who hate each other, who end up becoming roommates and creating a phone sex business that's very successful.
Gotta have a twist. Well, one of my favorites, and I believe is one of your favorites too, is Tootsie.
Oh, absolutely.
Which remains, if people have never seen this, so brilliantly written. It's one of those things where it all comes together with the writing and the actors. And give us a synopsis of what the plot is before we play a clip from it.
Well, the plot is simply this. Dustin Hoffman plays an actor who is very, very good, but very, very demanding. And he has alienated every single agent, every single director, every single producer in New York City, which is a hard thing to do, but he has done that. So the only way that he can get an acting gig is to go in drag. So he becomes Tootsie and he gets a job on a soap opera. And in the clip that we're going to hear, he is in his house fluffing his wing while his roommate, played by Bill Murray, is having a conversation with him.
So he's dressed as a woman he completely embodies the whole character of Dorothy in the soap opera.
Correct.
So he is, as far as anybody knows, he is Dorothy. So here's the clip.
Don't answer that.
Why not?
No, because it could be for Dorothy, please.
Why did you give him this number?
I had to. The show has to contact you in case they change the schedule. I had no choice.
I'll answer it and find out.
No. I don't want them to think Dorothy's living with a man. It's wrong for her. She lives alone.
Could be for me. This could be important. Why don't you answer it as Dorothy?
I can't answer it as Dorothy. What if it's Sandy?
What if it's Diane? How do I explain that there's a woman here?
All right, I guess there is. Time.
You know, when you were playing Cyrano and you stuck a saber underneath my armpit through the couch, you know, I didn't say anything. When you were hopping around ranting about your hump, saying that this was a bell tower, I didn't say anything. But I don't see any reason why I should just sit here pretending I'm not home just because you're not that kind of girl. That's weird.
I love that.
It's a great scene. It really
is a great scene.
And Bill Murray is so good in it. And it is the beginning of him being a comic on in the movies, but also that there's a serious side to that. And that's one of the other things you'll see in these roommate movies. The roommate sometimes is somebody who's a slob, somebody who doesn't have a good job. In Bill Murray's case, he's somebody who's trying to be an actor, but he keeps failing. He's trying to write, but he can't do it. But he's still somebody who you end up relying on. You're somebody that you do count on. And that is part of the roommate movie genre, is your roommate, no matter how crazy it is, if it's a good roommate, will come to your rescue and get your back.
Except in something like The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn, where right. they bought a condo together, they're going to be a couple, then they break up and neither one of them will move out
right.
to give ground until it gets so ugly.
That's right. that then it gets to be bad. But you know, for the most part, the genre is, I think, more ripe for comedy than drama.
Yeah. I think that's right.
And I think we'll see much more. Like, as you're saying, I think we'll start seeing those films where you have the kids coming back and or not leaving the nest and the parents getting kind of not feeling very good about that.
Yes. As Bill Cosby said, get out. That's the theme he wants to tell parents at graduation. So your favorite as we close?
You know what? I think that I liked Rope more than anything else because it's more dramatic. Again, it's the Hitchcock film based on the Loeb-Leopold murder, and it's about two roommates who commit murder because they feel that they're superior beings, and you have the psychological study of them breaking apart because of the enormity of what they have done.
Tootsie, for me, I would be awake for nights and days watching Rope, so no, I won't be doing that. Thank you very much, Garen Daly.
My pleasure.
We've been talking about roommates and how that peculiar dynamic plays out at the movies. And I've been speaking with our contributor, film critic, Garen Daly. Sharks, a love-hungry black bear, and a pop star eyeing waterfront property. These are some of the stories that were big news this summer on Cape Cod. As part of our review of regional headlines, we'll explore where these front-page stars are now. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.